You're listening to the Extra Point Show from the Just Call Jed Studios. Injured? Call Jed.com. WGR Sports Radio 550.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome into the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Derek Kramer, Zach Jones back this time around.
Morning.
As you were in Pittsburgh.
I was.
You were. You found out what IKEA is?
IKEA's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I kind of threw my girlfriend under the bus a little bit to start.
On the tweet.
IKEA was kind of cool. I kind of like it.
So
I could spend a lot of money there.
So your adventures in Pittsburgh.
It was good to get out of there.
Yeah. But your adventures in Pittsburgh, they include IKEA as one of the highlights. But it's good to have you back here, buddy.
Thanks.
Because stuff has happened.
Yeah, the weather's much colder here. Yeah,
oh, my God.
Which is crazy. Pittsburgh. It was like 75 and sunny the whole time. I show back up, it's like 55 and overcast. I'm like, oh, I missed you so much. I missed this.
But at the same time, before you left, the weather was great.
That's right. I took it with me.
Yeah.
And then I left it.
And then you left it there.
And then I left it.
You forgot something.
Well.
Good job.
We'll figure it out. We'll be there.
But a lot has happened.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, Joe Kelly and I, we hosted this back on Friday. And then the two of us went in two separate directions. We go to, Joe goes to the Bandits game.
Mm-hmm.
And I head out to Rochester for the Amherst game two against Laval. Both electric settings, both had parties outside, and it broke my heart.
Yeah.
Because, like, man, it's been 14 years. Food trucks weren't really a popular thing yet.
No,
the last
now
time
much
the Sabres
bigger.
Made the playoffs. Food truck owners, if the Sabres make the playoffs, food truck owners are going to be the first people to start salivating at profits.
I'm just like, we will just park right there.
Not the Buffalo Sabres.
Just right there.
Food trucks.
It's a little off.
I'm not kidding.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Walk out to a block party in Rochester, grab myself a patty melt from a food truck, and have a great time.
I'm a big food truck foodie.
Yes.
Like, I like traveling to other cities and experiencing their food trucks. I did not do that for Pittsburgh this year. Did not do that.
But the local establishments are just on wheels.
And it's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a party in the plaza.
Yeah.
With a bunch of local food
Breaks
trucks.
My
yeah, baby.
Heart. The Sabres do this, I swear to God, the city's not going to know how to function because we haven't done this in 14 years.
Well, we've seen how New York with the Knicks is functioning now that they've made an Eastern Conference final, and it's basically pandemonium.
They're not. There's riots in the streets.
And I'd imagine Buffalo would be pretty close to that. I mean, we all joke, like, would it be if the Sabres or Bills won their respective championships? I think now we're at a point with the Sabres of, if they just made the playoffs, it'd be bedlam.
I instructed my program director. I will betray you. I'm not covering the draft the minute that the Sabres make the playoffs. I'm at the arena.
You've openly let him know that.
Yes. And it's to a point of, I'll work, just not the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I will betray you for that.
Which is nice, though. You're like, I don't want off. Like, I'll work. It's going to be in a different avenue. Which is good for you.
Yeah. I just want that now. I want to betray my boss. Those are words I don't think anyone should ever say publicly, let alone with no context. But I'm going to say that. And yet, why am I so fascinated about things like this with even the Sabres, for example? Well, Toronto did it again. Holy smokes. They did it again. Boy. Not only did they just do the Leafs thing again, change is now inevitable. Not just for the Leafs, but for the entire National Hockey League.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's going to shift on its head. That's the part that is going to intrigue me truly the most. This past year, the Sabres did not take advantage of Boston falling from grace. Now Toronto might have to do the same. They're not re-signing Mitch Marner. They might not even re-sign John Tavares at a discount. What does that mean? It means Toronto's going to take a hit, probably a little bit of one, in the coming years. Because last year it didn't happen with Boston after they lost a lot of players. And it's like, okay, when's it actually going to happen? The answer was this past year. So within the next couple of years, Toronto's going to feel the sting of a Mitch Marner-sized hole in their lineup.
Mm-hmm.
because they do not have first-round picks. They do not have they have like one prospect that might be ready for the big time. But if you have to replace two top six forwards, well, you better hope that UFA offers up more than Mitch Marner.
Well, I mean, but that's the thing. This is ultimately, this is 8 years of trying and trying desperately and failing. That you had to make a lot of big boy moves. You had to do a lot of stuff. You had to kind of empty the cookie jar. Now it comes due. And you kind of, it feels like, it's not official, but it feels like you burnt the bridge with Marner. He's going to walk. Tavares, you probably should let go anyways.
The fans are booing every time he touched the puck in the third period.
Jerseys are on the ice last night during play.
During play. That is garbage behavior.
Yeah, that's not good, but it also kind of tells you just, in if you wanted a microscopic look at how the city's feeling about the team right now, that kind of tells you everything you need to know. That's 8 years of trying desperately and failing. And not just failing, but
in game seven, failing.
But doing it in style. Miserably. Having a guy like Brad Marchand own you. What was Jeremy's stat say? He's 5-0 against the Toronto Maple Leafs in elimination games.
Yep.
4 with Boston, now 1 with Florida. He owns you. Scored the last goal last night at 3 total points. And this group in particular, it's not like this just brutal grind out game seven loss where Matthews has 2 goals. You know, Marner has 3 assists, and they're producing, and they're it's not falling their way. The core group fails regularly.
Yep.
Regularly. And what was Matthew's quote last night? Too many guys were passengers. Dude, you're kind of the guy. You're the face of that.
At the least, you're the pilot.
Yeah.
The failure. If there's too many guys that are passengers, you call it out as such, you're the pilot.
I saw him say that, and I was like, oh, you're the last person I would have okayed saying that. Like a Leafs PR person should have been like, shut up, don't say that.
Well, at that point, it's too
everything.
Late.
It's too late. But it's just, it's.
At that point, the PR person is going, no.
Or the PR person's going like, add him to the list, he's gone too. All right, cool, let's let's ride.
But that's the strangest thing is that they can move on from this core,
mm-hmm.
or at least half of this core four that they have of Matthews, Marner, Nylander, and Tavares. Marner and Tavares are UFAs.
Yeah.
And you need to add another person. So that means that they might be active in the trade market. They are going to be active in unrestricted free agency based on what the free agency class might bring. Oh, by the way, there's more cap space for NHL teams now. You know what gets me giddy in the morning, Zach, on July 1st? NHL general managers with more money to spend than they know what to do with.
Which, if you look at NHL GMs, it's like
they don't have
money.
A good track record when they are given more money.
Just pretty much any money, they kind of lose it.
Someone might, and I'm going to say it's a bad idea. Someone might give Sam Bennett $9 million a year.
I know that's going to break my heart because I really want the Sabres to add Sam Bennett really bad.
But I'll tell you right now.
I was flirting with the idea of being
if the team drinks from the stupid juice, which they do for unrestricted free agency, general managers get all sorts of crazy.
Yeah.
With extra cap space. That's why Vegas rose to prominence so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
It's because there were so many of those bad contracts.
Yep.
The 2017 free agency class, never forget it. And they rarely learn lessons.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm genuinely fascinated
to see what happens when a guy like Mitch Marner, arguably in his prime or at least kind of in the middle of it, hitting free agency, a guy like Sam Bennett, who you could argue has been a key piece to Florida's rise to, I mean,
Florida might have to make a choice between Bennett and Aaron Ekblad.
Ooh, yeah, that's going to be tough. But like, also, you look at Florida, they're facing Carolina in the Eastern Conference Finals. Who's the other big choke artist in the Eastern Conference? It's Carolina. So Florida is staring down the pipe of making 3 straight cup finals.
And that's a lot of hockey to play.
But also, that's where you're going to get a team going, we need any piece of that team.
Any piece
of that team is going to help us. And I've already said it. I would happily take Sam Bennett. Now, we've discussed the contracts. I've moved my price down. But I'm already at that point of I'd like to add Sam Bennett. But as you just mentioned, that's a lot of hockey over the last 3 years. He's already 28. He plays a physical style, and he just had his best statistical season at 25 goals, 26 assists.
You say any piece, and I'm like, teams are going to sign like Thomas Nosek to $3 million per year now.
Dude, Erod's going to get a huge contract. I mean, like that's the cup tax, but that also is to you've potentially made three cup finals. You've already at least made three straight Eastern Conference finals. You're one of the best teams the last 5-6 years.
Yeah.
Inarguably.
It is disgusting. And the thing is that their UFAs are Bennett, Marchand, Ekblad, and then like Nico Sturm, Thomas Nosek, Nate Schmidt.
Oh yeah, the big guy. Marchand's just going to get, I think, a big deal. Is he 36, 37?
Marchand's 37.
Oh man, but someone's going to give him like a 6-year deal, and you're just going to sit there and go, are you serious? What is happening?
You want me to say something controversial?
You would do it?
I would give Brad Marchand $7 million without a doubt for 2 or 3 years.
Oh, well, the years is important. The years is incredibly important.
3 years.
3 years, I think I would do.
I'll sign him to 40.
I think I would do.
Because Brad Marchand, while a pest, still plays a very skilled-based game, and he's still good at it.
Yep.
Until he's not, I'd throw $7 million a year at Brad Marchand and not blink twice. Now you want me to say something really controversial? I think Toronto needs to do it.
I heard Jeremy and Nate were talking about that this morning, and I fully agreed with that. I mean, now the joke was that he goes to Toronto and like the Toronto curse still continues, but like he
can't kill you from the – well, he could kill you from the inside. But then I'd be like, what did Toronto do to you and who hurt you?
Yeah, in particular, what did they do to you? This is insane. But no, I mean, like, he is a killer. He is an absolute playoff killer.
But
he's
also,
unbelievable.
Everyone forgets because of how scuzzy he – will toe the line or even cross it. Brad Marchand is a very good skill-based hockey player.
Mm-hmm.
He is responsible in his own zone, but he is also a top-tier point producer still at 37. He's a comfortable top-six fixture.
Yeah.
So Marchand is a great idea there, and I think Toronto needs to be in on that. And I don't know if that's to fill the Marner-sized hole, but it definitely fills the Tavares one.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm looking at a team that has been consistently at the top of the National Hockey League standings for years now. Looking at them going, they're going to miss a 100-point player and get nothing out of it in return.
No, and I mean, and get probably significantly worse.
And get at least a little bit worse.
Will not be the Florida John Huberdeau go to Calgary, and we actually will become ascent. A better team.
Well, they also got something for that.
Yes, yes.
They get nothing from Marner now.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew it the minute that they didn't sign a new extension. How many times have I been saying something from the rooftops about Mitch Marner?
Yep.
To the Buffalo Sabres as the ideal. Now let's reintroduce that conversation in a different sense. Mitch Marner is kind of like the same way that I was pitching Miles Garrett. He is the face to an ideal that the Sabres need to be aggressive and need to add something to this team that they do not have. A top-tier talent.
Mm-hmm.
It can be through trade. It can be through unrestricted free agency. It doesn't have to be Marner. But he's the face representing the ideal.
Arguably, the ideal situation is actually not Marner.
Because he's going to cost so much.
Yeah.
It is a lot that you have to move books around for. The Sabres, as of this day, cannot afford the price he might command in unrestricted free agency.
Mm-hmm.
That said, money is always flexible. Players can be bought out. Matias Samuelsson, looking at you.
The cap is quote-unquote not real.
The cap is somewhat not real. In hockey, it's a little harder to
navigate. It's a little harder, yes.
But it's still going to be fascinating. And then wherever Marner signs, for example, that team gets a huge boost, at least in the regular season. The playoff failures are the playoff failures. And I think it has to do with the mix, not necessarily just the player. But I've got the captain saying there are too many passengers in this one when he's part of the problem.
He's such a big part of the problem. He's such a big part of the problem, man.
And it's a lack of awareness in that sense to not say anything. In Game 5, Chris Tanev saying, I'll take responsibility. I'll eat that 6-1 loss in Game 5. And everyone's like, wait, what did you do wrong?
We were talking about this a few weeks ago with Toronto of I just want a different story. It turned out it was the exact same story.
It is the exact same story, but now with a different ending.
Yeah, with a very different ending, which it actually feels like the ending.
It's the bad ending.
Like, Matthews will be the guy that's left. They've got Matthew Nyes, who I kind of like, and there's arguably maybe he's playing hurt. I mean, he had a pretty good start to the playoffs against Ottawa. But you mentioned they don't really have any prospects. They have, like, no first-round picks. Now they're going to lose a 100-point score. Tavares was a big part of this group. They're probably going to let him go. I already know there's a lot of Sabres fans. I'm right there with you. Just, he's making, like, $11 million a year. Let's just get that into the single digits, and I'd be happy. But it's done. If this goes how everything is pointing to, this is done. We can't talk about this core of the Toronto Maple Leafs anymore now.
And
it'll be also, Matthews still, sure. But for the most part, it's done.
And Matthews is kind of going, oddly enough, in an Alex Ovechkin arc.
Mm-hmm.
Washington, for the longest time, had the damnedest – actually, throughout Ovechkin's entire career, Washington had the damnedest time trying to get past the second round.
Yeah.
And it was oftentimes, though, it was the second round, not the first round. That mm-hmm. was typically mm-hmm. Toronto's
That was problem. Toronto's issue.
But Washington did this, too. They move on from some core pieces, and Washington breaks through one time. It turns out it's the only time that they break through, but they break through one time.
Mm-hmm.
Toronto has a lot of talent there. And there's a fifth player, by the way, in Toronto that should be getting a lot of the same questions. Mm-hmm. Morgan Rielly.
Yeah.
He's been there
the whole time. That's right. Yeah.
The core four was not originally including Tavares. It included Rielly
because mm-hmm.
they were all four of them young players coming up together.
Yeah.
Making the playoffs. Then they signed Tavares. And they still can't get it done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like the Leafs had this problem of depth being the issue. It is that the top four guys struggle. Their top four core players. I'm not even going to include Tavares on this as he was a UFA. Their core was their problem.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I think finally Brendan Shanahan loses his job. Because there's no one else that you haven't changed at that point other than the players. And, oh, by the way, two of them are conveniently going to take care of that.
Yeah, two of them you don't even have to worry about. You just let them walk.
It's not even a, oh, we need to get rid of them. No, they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
They are currently off your roster as of this moment. Your season ended. Their contract is up. Shanahan has to go. But I would be not surprised at all if he doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
It is the fallout from this is going to be something. And yes, that technically does mean that the hockey world does circle around Toronto at this moment, but for very differing reasons than you'd typically hear about.
I the older I get too, I'm cool with it. I'm fine with it. Like, I'm enjoying the hell out of the Knicks playoff run and the basketball world sort of like revolving around the Knicks and some of these young players. I'm cool with the fact that, like, for years, come playoff time, like, the main topic is Toronto, because arguably kind of should have been until the Stanley Cup final. Toronto is a loaded roster in the regular season that becomes inept the moment the playoffs begin. And it has happened every year. They finally got past the bugaboo that was the first round. But ultimately, in 8 years, they've won two playoff series. But they've got multiple Rocket Richard trophies. They've got multiple Hart Trophy voting. They've been a dominant team in every statistical category except the one that ultimately does matter, the playoffs.
Not only the playoffs, Game 7.
Just Game 7. Oh, man, the Game 7s. Not really jumping on the NBA here. But Game 7s yesterday were horrendous.
Well, there was one Game 7 that was good. It just didn't end with a right ending.
Well.
Or that's not a Game 7. That's a Game 2. Nice job, Derek.
Game 2.
Shut up.
I was like, well, it wasn't a Game 7.
Shut up.
It was an elimination game.
They're now going to 7, quote unquote.
It was an elimination game that was close, but didn't have a good ending.
Not all television for sports was bad yesterday. No, it's more of what I was trying to say.
Also, Scottie Scheffler winning the PGA Championship. There we go.
Mm-hmm.
There we go. But it's just, you looked at the two Game 7s yesterday. Oklahoma City just ran through Denver. I mean, ran through Denver, was never really in a contest. And then you flipped on, and I tweeted yesterday, I was irrationally excited yesterday for a guy that kind of can't stand either of those franchises.
Yeah.
Florida's gotten to a point where I'm like, all right, I've seen way too much of you. I'm kind of done. Toronto, it's Toronto. And also, as we were saying, I want a different story here. Stop writing the same thing over and over and over again. 10 minutes into the game, Toronto couldn't get the puck out of their own zone.
Mm-hmm.
Florida's just going after them. And then, you know, we end the first period at 0-0, and you're like, you know what? Toronto had some nice chances there. That, you know, it's a few screw-ups here and there, but they had some nice shit. Bob had to make a great save. Here we go. It's in for a great game. Oh, it's 3-0 before he could blink in the second period. They scored, what, three of those goals in like a six-minute run?
Mm-hmm.
It was over before it even started. And then it eventually balloons to 6-1, which coincidentally was the exact same score as Game 5, both at Scotiabank Arena. Great job, guys. At home, you get absolutely embarrassed.
Dog walked twice by the same score.
Same score.
By the way, you mentioned how we're kind of sick of seeing the same writing right now. Three of the four teams that made the conference final last year have made it.
Yeah. Is Carolina the only new one?
The difference is Carolina and the Rangers. Because Carolina choked against the Rangers in the second round.
Dallas, Edmonton, and then Carolina and Florida.
Yep.
But Dallas and Edmonton, I'm jazzed for that.
But if Florida and Edmonton win again,
it's the same final.
Which then tells me maybe you should fix the lottery system.
Just don't have a lottery.
Yeah. Just take it out.
That conversation last week was so enlightening. Loved it. Not here. It was nationally. But yeah. That was
enlightening. Enlightening on to who the Rubes are.
So elitist.
Yeah.
We need a lottery because that's going to fix tanking. What tanking? Charlotte's not trying to be bad, guys.
Yeah.
They're trying to win desperately. They've just been bad. And then they get punished. Instead of having the first pick, they're like, no.
Also,
you get the sixth.
Also,
move on.
Let's introduce a lottery system to a league where we've seen teams infamously eject themselves from the first overall pick in consecutive seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Houston yeeted themselves out of it after beating Indy in the last game of the year.
Mm-hmm.
The Patriots.
Patriots are the most recent one.
In a game where the other team punted the game, by the way.
Yeah, I don't care.
The Patriots weren't the ones tanking that game. It was the Bills.
Yeah, I don't care if fans or radio hosts or anybody like that is like crying for tanking. That doesn't mean it's a big problem. I will say, I don't think the NHL loved how brazen the Sabres were about it.
That's why Tim Murray has never worked in sports ever again. That's why Sam Hinkie has never worked in sports ever again.
I will tell you, I think other organizations don't take kindly to that.
No.
Does it happen every now and then? Of course. Is it an epidemic? No.
No.
Do we need to introduce a lottery to somehow fix it?
No.
What are you on?
Yeah.
It doesn't fix it. It makes it worse. Yeah. It makes the good team stay competitive because even when they're a middling team, they've got a chance at the number one overall pick. Or not even just that, a top five pick.
And
look at the NBA lottery results. Yeah. It was Dallas, San Antonio, and Philadelphia.
Look at the NHL.
Yeah.
New York and Utah.
Yeah. Two teams who were fine, good, almost. And now, cool, you have the number one and number two overall pick.
And while Utah didn't move up to the number two overall pick in that one, they did move up 10 spots.
Are they three or four?
Four.
Four. But the
11th,
they moved up.
The 11th and 14th place teams won those lotteries.
Yeah. You know who would love a lottery in the NFL? Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh would love a lottery.
Yes. Pittsburgh would love a lottery so much.
They might be the only team who would love a lottery. Everyone else would be like,
because
cool.
Because they can stay mid forever and then land a first overall pick.
Bingo.
And change the entire dynamic of their franchise.
Yeah, cool. I think we'd all would love to see an 8-9, 9-8 Pittsburgh Steelers team in 2 years land Arch Manning. I think we'd all love that. Ridiculous. So dumb. 803-0550, the number two call. We're going to talk a little bit about the NHL playoffs, especially Toronto and everything that's going on there or what is eventually going to be going on there. But we've also got two guests today and starting right after this quick timeout. Sal Mariana of the Democrat and Chronicle. It is a Monday at 10:30. Talk a little baseball. We had the Subway Series and the Freeway Series going on this weekend. Get his thoughts on some of that as well. And we'll see, you know, if he watched Game 7s yesterday, which were bad TV. Man at 11, Zach Pearson of the Bear Report. There is a book coming out, Seth Wickersham. Caleb Williams was a part of it. Not a great light on the Bears organization. We'll get Zach's thoughts on that coming up at 11. But, of course, your call is always welcome to 803-0550, the number two call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, and this is WGR.
Swings and sends one to right. That's Bruins tonight of Freed, Goldschmidt, and Bellinger, difference makers.
Cody Bellinger, grand slam last night in the three-game Subway Series against the New York Mets. The Yankees take two games. And Bellinger has seven hits, two home runs, including that one grand slam. He dominated the Mets as the Yankees take two of three against the Mets.
Wow. Something of quote-unquote vengeance being paid?
I don't know. It's just unbelievable.
There's that Juan Soto thing. And
oh, the Juan Soto thing.
Yeah, there was an extra line of drama in the Subway Series.
That is right. And for more on that, we go to the Western Hotline. Sal Marana of the Democrat and Chronicle joins us on this beautiful Monday morning. Sal, how are we doing?
Well, guys, I'm doing pretty good. It was a great weekend series. You know I'm a Yankees fan. Mm-hmm. Taking two out of three from Howard Simon's Mets is always a good thing. Yeah, it was. The games were, I mean, you know, it's the middle of May, and I always say every game counts, but, you know, it is still the middle of the May, right? And in this series, it felt like October, which was great. I mean, Yankee Stadium was pumped, and obviously Soto coming back for the first time certainly helped that. But these were three games that felt like October baseball, and it was great. It was really great theater all weekend.
It did have that feeling, Sal. I think about it. It's not obviously a divisional matchup, but like the Padres Dodgers or those early season matchups always have that fervor in the crowd. There's a different level of excitement. Home runs, you're flipping the bat, you're throwing it. I mean, there was an energy there, and that Bellinger grand slam. And yeah, I didn't realize how good of a series he was having up until, you know, 25 minutes ago. Seven hits, two home runs. I mean, he was on fire.
Oh, well, that was one of the storylines of the weekend, right? I mean, Soto goes to the Mets. You know, he basically spurns the Yankees, and they had to pivot in the offseason and use some of that money to go fix the roster, which I've said time and time again, I was fully okay with Soto moving on because I knew the Yankees could then upgrade other positions. Well, part of the retool was getting Bellinger. They acquired him in a trade from the Cubs. They signed Paul Goldschmidt. They signed Max Fried. They would not have signed Max Fried if they had brought Soto back because there's no way they could have paid for him. So right there, those three guys were, you know, part of the plan to once Soto was gone. And all three of those guys had huge weekends for the Yankees. Fried was great last night. Goldschmidt, as he's had all season, was clutch in certain spots. And then Bellinger was really the man of the match, right? I mean, all weekend long, he had gotten off to a rough start with the Yankees. It was not going well. His average was down to like 191 at one point. And all of a sudden, he's caught fire. He's had a 13-game hitting streak, and it really kind of culminated in these three games. He was outstanding both at the plate, and he also made some big plays in the field. So, yeah, that was really nice to see.
Sal, I think I need to do this as a bit. As long as we're going to keep talking, hey, the Rockies won since last time we talked. But I'm looking like elsewhere around baseball, though. The Minnesota Twins were on unconscious heater. They won 13 straight. That just ended. And they put themselves back into conversations now of being a playoff team as well. Who are some of the teams around baseball that you're looking at as potential wild card threats that might be able to be a little surprising this year?
Yeah, I mean, the Twins are definitely there. They started off terribly, and they ripped off this 13-game winning streak. You know, they got a couple guys back, and Royce Lewis is one of their best players, and the guy is just he's as bad as Stanton when it comes to injuries. He's always hurt. So they've got him back now. They survived the collision last week between Correa and Buxton. I know Buxton's back. I'm pretty sure Correa is too. That could have been a disaster, but it ended up being okay. And they're playing really well. Now, all of a sudden, that AL Central is a pretty good division. The Tigers have the best record in baseball, right? And now the Twins have gotten red hot, and the Guardians are still hanging in. Even the Royals are right there. They're only 5.5 back. So that's been an interesting division. You know, people forget last year, everyone laughs at the AL Central. They sent three teams to the postseason in 2024. The Yankees took care of two of them, beating the Royals and the Guardians. That could happen again because I'll tell you what, the AL East looks incredibly mediocre outside of the Yankees, and the AL West kind of the same thing. So if you're looking for surprise teams right now, I think the Twins would certainly qualify as a team that could sneak in there. And then, you know, we'll see on the Guardians and Angels, or as Guardians and Royals.
No, no, it's okay, Angels. I mean, they swept the Dodgers in the freeway series.
Yeah.
I mean, they're still five games below 500, but it's fine.
Yeah, I don't see the Angels making it eventually, but what a weekend for them.
Yeah.
To go into Dodger Stadium and sweep the Dodgers. I think it was the first time since 2010 that they've swept a freeway series. Yeah, I don't know what happened. I didn't pay too much attention to what was happening out there, but that was a shocking result to see them sweep the Dodgers. Because, you know, the Dodgers are still a great team. I just don't know what the heck happened out there.
Neither do I, really. I mean, Zach Neto batting leadoff seems to work. Matthew Lugo being called up is kind of fun. I was in Pittsburgh this weekend, Sal, with my girlfriend, and we were keeping up on the scores, and she goes, is this, like, surprising? And I'm like, this is the most surprising thing that's happened to me in, like, 6 months. Like, this is unreal. Like, they are not a good baseball team.
Were you there for the Skeens Day yesterday?
No. I think they were in Philadelphia. I wanted to go to Pittsburgh.
They were in Philly. Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah.
I wanted to be in Pittsburgh to see a Pirates game. Didn't work out. Weather was still beautiful. Ultimately, it worked out. Right. I did want to talk, though, real quick, because you did mention the AL East and how kind of mediocre it's been. Baltimore, I know it's been a story all year with how bad they've been. They fired their manager as well. This kind of now is also sort of a running topic with our conversations is a manager is fired. We talk about it. But they – I mean, not that long ago, they were kind of seen as, you know, they were doing what Houston was doing. They're going to get a ton of prospects all come up together and be good. And now they're maybe going the way of Toronto, just a lot faster.
Yeah, the Orioles are obviously the most disappointing team in baseball this year. That's just a shocking story. They won 101 games 2 years ago, won the division, and then, you know, flamed out in the postseason. And then last year, you know, they still won 91, but you could tell this all started probably in the second half of last season because they were cruising along. In fact, they were in first place last year until early September, and then the Yankees finally took it over. But this was starting with the Orioles last season. They're kind of a decline, and they're in complete free fall right now, and it really is because, well, two reasons. Their pitching is just absolutely horrendous. They did nothing in the offseason to upgrade a rotation that wasn't really all that great last year. But the most surprising thing is that all that young talent, all those top prospects that a lot of us who follow the AL East very closely were worried about, that they would become the next, you know, the next dynasty type of team because all these young kids are coming up together. They just have underperformed tragically this season. Adley Rutschman, number one, their catcher, he's been awful since the All-Star break last year. So, yeah, they fire Hyde. That was a complete scapegoat because he really has nothing to do with them. But they're in big trouble in Baltimore. And that is a surprising story to me.
Yeah, they have the worst run differential in the AL, minus 85. They only have one more win than the White Sox, but the White Sox sit at minus 53. I mean, that kind of tells you, too, how bad that pitching rotation's been.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, they lost Grayson Rodriguez, who's probably their ace. They just DFA'd Kyle Gibson. I mean, they signed him late in spring training. He just made a few starts, and he's terrible. I mean, he got killed again this weekend, and they finally just cut ties. I know Eflin came back. He was on the injured list, and he got rung up yesterday. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know what they do there. I can't see them being buyers now to try to fix it unless they get really hot between now and the trade deadline. They might be sellers, as a matter of fact. So, yeah, like I said, I did not see the Orioles just collapsing the way they have this year. But I'm happy about it because as a Yankee fan, that was a team that I sort of worried about before the season started.
Sal, shifting over, I'm a hockey junkie, and I headed out to Rochester on Friday night to catch game two between the Rochester Americans and the Laval Rocket. I got to say, that was probably one of the more entertaining games that I've been to in a while. I've tried to make a Rochester playoff game every year, and I was able to make this one. I was, A, surprised at the fact that Laval's game plan just seemed like try to take everyone's head off. And then Rochester, though, overcoming it. The pass from Rusek to Kulik for the game winner on the power play was nothing short of spectacular. And a quote from Michael Leone after the game, "You watch the NHL playoffs, you need your best players to be your best players. We saw something happen in Toronto where that's not been the case. They lose. But Rochester, those top-tier Sabres prospects, shined in Game 2.
Yeah, I mean, that, I'll tell you what, I missed game one. I missed game one of the previous series. I've covered every home game since game one because it was the first night of the draft in the previous series. These two games against Laval have been outstanding. The Amherst lost the first game, but they played really well. I mean, Laval was just the better team that night, and they were the best team in the AHL all year. They had 101 points. They are, like you said, they're physical. They will finish a check every opportunity they get, but they're also incredibly talented and skilled. So I really thought the Amherst were going to be in over their heads. Friday night, backs are kind of against the wall because the next three games now are in Laval, and they could not obviously go down 0-2 and think they were going to win. Now they're back even at 1-1, and we'll see. I mean, they have really played this team, I think, straight on. They're pretty well evenly matched based on what I've seen. And the other night, well, you were there, they played well. The Amherst got some clutch performances. The goal by Kulik to win it was, you're right, the pass from Rusek, you know, C&I got through traffic through the crease, and then it goes out to Kulik. He goes down to one knee and just rips a laser through a screen. It was a great goal. I was really impressed by the Amherst. So now we'll see. They got to play the next three in Laval. That's going to be tough, but if they get past that team, I don't know, man. they could be in position to do something really special.
Game three Wednesday, Sal's mentioned, in Laval, and then the Yankees have a three-game series starting tomorrow at home against the Texas Rangers. How are we feeling about that one, Sal?
Yeah, Rangers are another team that I think people thought would be better. I mean, right now they're 2 games over 500 and they're 2.5 out because the AL West is not great. So I think they're going to be in it, obviously. What's killing them is unbelievably horrible offense. They're like 26th in runs per game and OPS, all these ridiculous numbers that for their lineup just should not be. Now, on the flip side, what's going to be a problem for the Yankees is this team is pitching lights out. They are really, really stacked, and the Yankees are going to see DeGrom in this series, who's back from his injury. He's healthy. He looks great. Eovaldi has pitched incredibly well for them, and they're going to see him in the last game. So it's going to be, I would guess, probably a low-scoring series, and it'll be tough. The Rangers are a good team, and they might be a team that starts to figure it out here as they kick it up in competition against the Yankees.
All right. Sal, thank you so much for jumping on with us. We'll talk again soon.
All right, guys. Have a good week.
Thanks, Sal. Sal Marana of the Democrat and Chronicle, talking both MLB baseball and the Rochester Americans. I got to get to one of those games. I have to.
Well, you need them to win two in Laval.
Yeah, I know too many people who have gone and have been like, "Dude, it's awesome," and I'm like, "Rochester's not that far."
It was 9,100 plus packed at Blue Cross Arena on Friday night, including myself and one of our friends, Nick. Mm-hmm. We drove down the 90 to go to that game, and it was a great time. Again, a part of my heart broke because, you know, I'm seeing a party in the plaza for Rochester in the playoffs.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, my God, just do it one more, just one different time. because that also, man, the playoffs that he's having, Rochester's Lord and Savior, do you believe in Cal Clegg? Because if not, I'm here to spread the doctrine that is Cal Clegg.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first time he's ever been in a playoffs, by the way. When he was with Rochester, when he was with the Sabres organization, the Rochester Americans never made the playoffs. He jumps around the AHL. He doesn't make the postseason until now. This is his first playoffs.
He's performing.
Performing better than Toronto's guys do in the league. I did find that funny, though, that quote from Mike Leone, though, of your best players need to be your best players. And he references the NHL playoffs. And then we see Toronto goof it.
And
with their best players not being their best players.
Yep, 100%. We'll get more on that after a quick timeout. We'll read some of your tweets as well. Talking about potential Sabres off-season moves, what could happen in the NHL as a whole. But before we hit our next timeout, join us in the fight against cancer by riding with Bulldog and WGR's Ride for Roswell team on Saturday, June 28th. Once you join our team, you will receive an email to pick up your t-shirt and water bottle at Tom's Pro Bikes on Walden Avenue in Lancaster. Not a rider? You can still support the cause by donating to our team and helping us reach our goal of $10,000 before the ride. Visit WGRM550.com for details. 803-0550 is the number to call if you want to jump on. Coming up at 11 as well, Zach Pearson of the Bear Report will get more on the Chicago Bears as potentially a crucial season is on the horizon for them. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, you're listening to WGR. Hour number one rolls along here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. It is brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Zachary Jones, Derek Kramer here hanging with you on a beautiful Monday morning. It is the middle of May.
It may be a Monday morning, but at least it looks nice.
It looks nice. It looks nice. We've got playoff action still going on. Nothing really tonight, though. Everything kind of starts tomorrow, which is okay. I think we need a little bit of a reprieve. The Game 7s were not great yesterday.
It's also because there were Game 7s. They're not going to
force you to play right away. But I'm ready. I'm in. I love the conference finals in both sports. I know, as you mentioned earlier in the hour,
it's the same.
Hockey's essentially the same, except for, you know, move the Rangers out and put Carolina in. I still kind of like it. I think it still looks good. There's a lot of storylines that can be changed and fixed and legacies, engaged,
can
I guess.
Can Edmonton get back to try to right the wrongs of the Stanley Cup final last year?
And maybe against the exact same team. Let's go, baby. Come on.
But also, there's potential of a Mikko Rantanen bowl on the other side of that. The other two teams in the conference final. Ta-da!
I didn't even think about Carolina-Dallas. Oh, man.
And also, if it's Carolina-Dallas, I'm probably involuntarily pooing my pants and throwing up at the same time.
I'm there. Mikko Rantanen's been
like
a man possessed.
I'm screaming, crying, throwing up so mad that it would be Dallas and Carolina. Like, that would probably, at least there's the Mikko Rantanen bowl of it, but I would hate both of those teams so much.
So much fun. It'd be so much fun.
I would hate that so much. I actually need the Florida Panthers now for once.
I think I'd probably want Edmonton, Carolina.
After I've been cheering against them now for the first two rounds, I need the Florida Panthers to actually do this
thing.
Oh, you want a rematch of 06.
That's what I was thinking of, a rematch of 06, and this time Edmonton actually wins it. Let's go.
I want Carolina nowhere near the playoffs.
Let's go.
Because
they're in the playoffs every year.
Near the Stanley Cup, I should say. Because I don't understand how they continue to get away with being this. But also, the Hurricanes are more of the Bills than the Leafs are, for example.
Mm-hmm.
They're another team, though, that it has been. You got to get over this hump. You got to make the final. At least of the four teams, at least Dallas has made a final in recent years. Of course, the other two teams just made the final. Carolina's the one where it's, okay, it's been almost 20 years. Are you sure you're good?
Are you going to figure it out, guys?
Are you going to figure it out? I hope not.
803-0550, the number to call. Let's also get connected to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We kind of threw it up to Twitter a little bit of like just having fun.
We got a couple of responses up
Toronto is going to be vultured to death.
Oh,
here,
my.
It seems like in the offseason.
I can only imagine listening to 590 right now.
No. No, that'd be a long day.
Long day. No, your radio just gets set on fire.
Yeah, everyone's Judas.
It's
get rid of everybody.
It's spontaneously combust if you just turn the down. Oh! Like,
do we even, at this point, do you think Toronto Maple Leafs fans are even thinking about Game 1 Anthony Stolarz?
I don't think so anymore.
I don't think so.
It's because it's the narrative that has been here for every year.
Yep.
Getting connected with our fans, though. Wing Eater saying, don't need high-end talent, alluding to Marner. We need leadership. That said, give me Tavares at a reduced salary instead. Tavares is going to be a very popular idea as well. And that's why I say that Mitch Marner is the face of the ideal. But a John Tavares signing is not a bad thing either.
Yeah.
Especially if it's a proper cap hit.
He's been making $11 million on this contract, $11 million per year on this contract with Toronto. If you can get that down to like $7.5 million and sign him for like 3 years, 2 years.
Craig tweets in.
Pretty good.
Craig tweeting in, do the Sabres know which direction they want to go? Go big after Mitch in free agency and move number 9 in prospects and try to see if you can get another NHL-ready player, or rely on the current group, re-sign and the RFAs and try to get some middle-tier free agents again.
I mean, y'all know where I sit on the number 9 pick. I know it doesn't get moved often, but move it.
It's a sweetener. It's not a core piece to a trade.
I think you're right. It is a sweetener to maybe one of your more high-end prospects, and that's where.
Or then you can lower the level of tier on your prospect, adding number 9 to kind of like help soften the blow on that end. That said, the Sabres have a pretty good draft record. I don't mind if they'd make the pick at this point.
Which is weird. They have like,
I believe in their scouting staff.
Under Kevin Adams, the drafting has gotten good.
I believe in their scouting staff. Adam tweeting in a decent conversation back and forth, talking about how I'm ready to betray my program director the minute the Sabres make the playoffs. You guys would be covering the draft and that Sabres playoff Saturday. You'd just be doing the draft and Sabres pregame at Key Peak Center. And you know what?
It's not a bad idea. And you responded back with, bring in Brian and we'll have a party. It'll be a party in the plaza, too, if they host a game.
There we go.
Oh, actually, they probably have a viewing party. It's the first time in 14, 15 years.
Yeah, they're going to do a lot for that.
So I would hope that next year we can do the draft from the arena. That'd be awesome.
That'd be kind of cool. 803-0550. Again, the number to call. You want to jump on some of these conversations we're having today. But coming up after a quick timeout, Zach Pearson of the Bear Report will join us talking the Chicago Bears, the potential book coming out, or not the potential, the book coming out by Seth Wickersham. Talking about the, issues Caleb Williams had initially going to the Chicago Bears, get his thoughts on that, and also some other stuff with the Bears arguably winning the offseason again, or at least being one of those teams. We'll get all his thoughts on that after a quick timeout. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
You're listening to the Extra Point Show from the Just Call Jed Studios. Injured? Call Jed.com. WGR Sports Radio 550.
The level of entitlement is breathtaking. And it's no wonder why he failed initially, and it's no wonder why the coach got fired. So now they go out and get an offensive coach in Ben Johnson. And you know what? Now it's on his ass. It's going to be on his ass to live up to these so-called lofty expectations that he has for himself and that his father has for his son. And I understand there could be a discussion, hey, this is where quarterbacks go to die. Well, you know, go fix it. Be the reason that the team is going to turn it around and you be the player that you think you are. And I would just tell him, you know, just keep your mouth shut. You're going into the greatest league that there's ever been for the sport that we all love. You're going to have a chance one day to make $500 million because guys like me and guys before me all went on strike so you could actually make more money. So keep your pie hole shut and go out and play football and earn your keep and earn your respect.
I had not heard that clip before. It's Boomer Esiason. Josh played it for us.
Some of it screams settle down.
Oh, it's never the player's fault. The organization's the league. Perfect. Perfection. It's all your fault. Figure it out. Not, you know, didn't look at any of the other quotes that the coaches and the offensive coordinator were just leaving Caleb Williams to go run around, go watch film. You have no idea how to do it? That's fine, bud. You'll figure it out. Go out there. Caleb was right. He was right.
It is the fact that it was a lame duck situation.
My goodness.
That got to draft a quarterback, and that's never in the history of the league worked out very well.
He got the coach fired. The coach is bad. The Bears just did this with Fields, with Nagy. Mm-hmm. A dead man walking coach drafted a quarterback, and they're like, we screwed that up. Shouldn't have done that. Oh, man, that kind of frustrated me. I was not prepared for that. For more on the Bears, we'll see if our guest, Zach Pearson of the Bear Report on the Western Hotline, is just as frustrated as I am. Zach, good morning. How are we doing today?
I'm doing good. I don't think Boomer actually read the article or has been paying attention to the Chicago Bears the last 15 or 20 years, because I had the same reaction when I came across. I saw it. Well, it was like Friday, I think it was. I was like, does this guy even know what he's like referencing or talking about here? It was brutal.
Did your eyes also roll against your skull when he's like, you're in the greatest league in the world? Like, okay, all right. Enough.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. It was just all crazy. I like I said, I don't think he even actually read the article or listened to anything, because in the article, Caleb Williams literally says, like, okay, Dad, I'm going to go do this. I'm going to go change this franchise around. And, you know, I've been around Caleb Williams for a year now. I've seen Carl Williams at games, you know, after games, waiting for his son, which is standard. All the parents do that. And I've never seen one thing essentially negative from Caleb or Carl Williams at all. I mean, he was literally just at two or three high schools in Chicago talking to students, and it was not publicized or anything at all. So, yeah, I don't know where any of that came from.
It's just it is weird, too. I know Caleb Williams' rookie season. I mean, it was not Jaden Daniels, right? He didn't explode onto the scene and change Washington Commanders and kind of make them what they are now. But he wasn't bad, and there was this feeling around, like when Shane Waldron was hired as offensive coordinator, Jackson Smith and Jigba at the Super Bowl last year is like, I hope that works out. Like, I mean, there were signs that this coaching staff is maybe not going to get it done, and ultimately they're fired, you know, midway through the year. And now, like, there seems to be some pretty good hope with getting Ben Johnson, who I'd argue the Bears wanted last year.
Yeah, well, I mean, you guys said it in that intro. Like, the Bears literally just did this with Justin Fields and Matt Nagy, the lame duck situation that they had. So this is not new to any of us. Like, this is – the dysfunction has been like this for years. And after that 2023 season, you know, it was clear. They should have fired Matt Eberflus. They should have moved on. They beat up on a bunch of bad teams at the end of the year with bad defenses, and they decided, okay, we're going to run this back, and Caleb Williams is going to save us, and – they hired Shane Waldron, the only guy to get two interviews an offensive coordinator for them, and passed up on a lot of guys. And you could tell right away, like training camp, you could tell, like, okay, this offense not going to work. They're going to be moving on pretty quick. So, yeah, I do think they got the right guy in, Ben Johnson. You know, Ben Johnson was actually asked, you know, or talked about something like the job wasn't open back in, you know, when a couple of years ago when the Bears and other teams were interested. So I've been curious to see if they would have taken it if they would have fired Eberflus back then. But I think they're on the right track. They finally, you know, they finally fired a coach in season. They opened up the checkbook to get a new head coach, the top guy that a lot of teams wanted. And, you know, they have an offense. They've built around Caleb Williams. They've invested in the offensive line. They've invested in more wide receiver and tight end. So, yeah, it's like kind of all full systems go. And kind of back to the Daniels point, like, yeah, Caleb did not have a bad season. Jaden Daniels had a historic rookie season. You know, Bo Nix went to the playoffs. Drake May had flashes. I hate these arguments where we have to, you know, compare all these players. Why can't all of them be good? You know, Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, both good. Like, it's just not that, like, one has to be good and the other can't be good. So, yeah, it's just, it's kind of these offseason talking points at this stage of the offseason.
It's the peak offseason sort of content, unfortunately, the world that we live in, Zach. But one of the things, though, that I do like but also hate now about this is that Caleb Williams, A, has an opportunity to really turn things around here, because there's a good situation with the new head coach that is going to try to do everything to maximize his talents. But unfortunately, this book does put a lot of pressure now on him possibly to be you have to turn this around very quickly, or the fans are going to turn almost immediately, even starting in like week one.
Yeah, I mean, there's high expectations this year, and that is from getting Ben Johnson. That's from, you know, Caleb Williams going into a second season where you have to make that jump. You know, you can't really hit that second year wall. You know, you have to get better. And like I mentioned, they invested a lot into this offense and a lot around Caleb Williams. It's time for Caleb Williams to invest in them and show them, like, okay, I'm the guy. You've put in, you know, these pieces on offense to help me. So, yeah, you know, the expectations are high with Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams. And it's an NFC that, you know, outside of the Eagles and I'd say the Lions, it's not as good as the AFC. And it's a chance for the Bears to get into the playoffs. You know, you can throw the Commanders probably in there as well as top teams. But yeah, like this is an NFC where you should be able to compete for a playoff spot right away. And anything, you know, I'd say if they have another season like they did last year, under 5 wins or so, it'd just be a major disappointment in Chicago.
American Kings, a biography of the quarterback by Seth Wickersham, is kind of where all of this started. And Zach, when you do look at the NFC, you mentioned it, there's kind of there is room to make the playoffs here. But I'd also argue the NFC North, even with the Lions kind of having to clean house with their head coach or with their coordinators, not because they wanted to, but because they got head coaching jobs, and then Minnesota going to a different quarterback and JJ McCarthy, it still feels like it is such a loaded division. Has Chicago, in your mind, you know, here in the middle of May, done enough, especially if Caleb takes that second-year jump, which we've seen some guys do? Could they vault some of these teams to get in the playoffs, or do you still think that division maybe is just a bit too tough?
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't say that they could compete for a division title right away. I'd still be a little surprised, just because, you know, I think Detroit will roll back just a little bit, but not a lot. They're still a really good football team. They still have a lot of talent. The biggest questions are, like you said, JJ McCarthy. What's he going to be? If he's good, the Vikings should be right there in the playoffs again and a contender. Green Bay is kind of the interesting one to me. Realistically, Chicago should have beat them twice. They were a tipped field goal away from sweeping them for the first time in what feels like forever. But yeah, you know, the Bears have a chance to, you know, have a shot at going to the playoffs in the NFC, but you're right. That division is pretty tough, and there's a lot of talent there. There's a lot of teams that I think all of them got better this offseason, but a lot of questions as well surrounding each team. So we'll kind of have to wait and see, but I think, yeah, you know, winning the division would be a little bit of a surprise, but taking that step forward and showing, okay, like we're not going to get swept by our division rivals and we can compete, I think that'd be a good first step for the Bears.
Zach, I did want to also get your thought on a receiver that I know a lot of Bills fans were kind of eyeing up a little bit for the draft. That is Luther Burden, who a lot of Bills fans, including myself, if he was there at 30 and the Bills had taken him there, that would have been happy. Bears ultimately get him at 39, their second offensive player that they take in those first two picks, Colston Loveland as well. You know, what are your thoughts kind of on those additions? Because I know, especially the Colston Loveland pick, at least our draft coverage, it was a little surprising knowing Cole Kmet is right there.
Yeah, you know, well, starting with Loveland, I was surprised. I thought it would be Warren if they did take a tight end. But looking at it and looking at, Loveland's film and what Ryan Poles had to say and kind of watching how Ben Johnson, you know, used TJ Hockenson and all those tight ends that he had in Detroit and you know, Sam Laporta as well, it does make sense. The way he moves, he's more of a receiver. I don't want to compare to Brock Bowers because Brock Bowers is, you know, kind of a crazy talent at tight end. But he's more of a receiving threat in my eyes than Tyler Warren. It was shocking at the time, but now looking at it, okay, it makes sense on how they used Laporta last year. And he's actually that comp is Laporta for Loveland. So I think he'll add another element to the offense. I think him and Cole Kmet would probably work well together. I know there's been talk, the Bears will move on from Kmet. They just signed him to a deal a couple of years ago. I think you're going to need two tight ends. The Bears are going to want to run a lot of 12 personnel, and you know, you'll have your blocking tight end, you'll have a receiving threat, and you know, Kmet could also roll out and be a receiving threat as well. With Burden, you know, it was interesting because the Bears really like Trevion Henderson out of Ohio State. I think he would, if he was there at 39, they would have taken him. He obviously went at 38 to the Patriots. There was talk the Bears were trying to move up, and they couldn't get a deal done to get Henderson. So that tells me that, you know, they want to add another running back in the backfield, but they get Burden, who a guy, you look at mock drafts, you know, last summer, he was a consensus first-round pick. He was a top 10, top 15 pick. A really good talent out of Missouri. Production dipped last year. I think that's kind of why he fell a little bit. You watch the tape, you know, there are concerns with him taking some plays off. And, you know, when he's not getting the ball, he's not really fully invested. But everything we've seen from him so far through rookie minicamp and everything, you know, he's concentrated, he's focused, he kind of knows, like, this is an opportunity for me to prove everyone wrong. I should have been a first-round pick, and I think he'll fit in well. You know, they have DJ Moore and Rome Odunze, now they have Burden, and they kind of interchange those guys in different spots. So, yeah, they're definitely investing in Caleb Williams and adding more pieces.
Zach Pearson here with us on the Wesher Hotline, covering the Bears with Bear Report. So, when it comes down to it, first of all, when we're talking about the draft, I remembered the Bears were the willing combatant to trade with Buffalo twice, by the way. So thanks for giving us plenty of excitement, Chicago, for that draft weekend as a whole. But when it comes to the schedule release, everything like that, there's always a little bit of hoopla. And with the Bears, it starts right away. It's Monday Night Football against Minnesota, of course. The debut, hopefully, for J.J. McCarthy. So it's a nice little matchup between Williams and McCarthy that should be a divisional matchup for a long time coming. But it does look like they do get a pretty good national spotlight here, hoping for their ascent for this season.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good game, week one, for them. It's a game where they can come out and, with the high expectations, prove that they belong. I like the matchup just because you're getting a rookie quarterback, you know, likely going to be his first start in the NFL, be on the road in prime time. Caleb Williams has already seen Brian Flores' defense twice. Ben Johnson's seen it a bunch of times from being in the NFC North. And, you know, the Bears now have Dennis Allen, a defensive mastermind who can, you know, make things complicated for J.J. McCarthy. So I thought this was a good matchup. You know, I thought maybe, you know, Cleveland or Pittsburgh would have been kind of a way to ease into the season in week one, but that just wasn't going to happen. This would probably have been the best ideal matchup for the Bears, in the primetime slot for week one. And like you said, you know, all those expectations, primetime, Monday Night Football. It's going to be a fun one to kind of close out week one.
All right, Zach, thanks for jumping on with us here. I had to text you the moment I saw the Seth Wickersham book quotes because I'm like, oh no, like it's another offseason. It's another offseason of something with the quarterback position. Everyone's going to make the jokes of they get a pope before 4,000 yard passer. I'm like, oh boy, yep. But we're making it through.
Yeah, no, and I'll say this. You know, everything I've seen around Caleb Williams and been around him, like all that stuff you heard pre-draft, being a diva and all that, I haven't seen any of that. He's been a nice guy. He's been great with the media. So, yeah, it's crazy. Like I said, it's all the off-season talking points, and hopefully we get through this and get to some football. But I appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, thanks so much, Zach. We'll talk again soon.
Yeah.
That was Zach Pearson there on the West Her Hotline. I do want the Bears like to have a season where
I just want the Bears to get that 4,000-yard passer.
Yeah, like I've been alive for good Bears teams. Like I mean, yes. Like the Mitch Trubisky, like the double doink team. Oh, that was a good team. Trubisky himself was not. Very
I
was. Good.
That's why I made a face at you.
But, like, I've been alive for good Bears teams. I mean, even 06. Like, I remember the Brian Urlacher and Devin Hester, that kind of stuff. But I've never seen a Bears team that I'm scared of their offense. And it does kind of bother me that in the year of our Lord 2025, that is still a fact. And I'm just, and they are putting a lot of resources in there. I mean, again, they go back to the well of multiple offensive picks. They go the offensive guy. And it kind of like I made a face too. We're not on camera, but I made a face when Zach mentioned that like in training camp they could kind of see that the Shane Waldron offense was not going to work. And I'm like, what are we doing here? Like, what is going on? And like I could only imagine with some of the quotes that were coming out of that book. Again, American Kings, a biography of the quarterback by Seth Wickersham, going to come out in around September. You know, Bulldog and Mike talked about it last week. And I can only imagine what that would have been like if it was a Buffalo quarterback.
Oh, yeah. No, I said this on Saturday. Mm-hmm. This city would not have tolerated Jim Kelly's antics
mm-hmm.
in a social media age.
I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. I agree. And there were antics even once he was on the Bills, the Bickering Bills. We all know
yes.
that. But social media, I think, has elevated that stuff to you can sort of forgive it, forget it, move on when the times get better. With social media,
you don't.
You kind of don't. And yet it's there forever, and people do not forget. And I think that's partially because more people talk to each other about it mm-hmm. in the moment it's happening. And I think that's maybe the big difference rather than it being the water cooler talk that, you know, that's kind of famous for talking about TV shows. You go into the office around the water cooler and you're talking. It became in the minute Jim Kelly didn't sign with the Bills and he signs with the Houston Gamblers, that would have been a talking point for 3 years.
Who knows? Maybe it was.
But I think it would have been so aggressive. And then because I don't really know how Bills fans were reacting when Marino in his second year throws 48 touchdown passes.
I was going to say, I wasn't really up and at it when Jim Kelly didn't sign with the Bills.
But I also don't hear any Bills fans that were around that time making it sound like it was this big deal of like, oh, hell, how has this happened?
Yes.
I always hear about Pittsburgh Steelers fans talking about how they didn't get Dan Marino.
Mm-hmm.
And then ultimately, you know, he goes on to do great things in Miami. Now, ultimately, that's because he's from there.
I think part of it is he does ultimately end up doing great things for the Bills on the field. But, yeah, no, I think, though, in this day and age, if this were something that were happening, oh, my God.
Or could you even imagine year two of Josh Allen? After a rookie year that was up and down,
right.
Passing was really rough, but the running game was great. If all of a sudden a book was coming out, and these are the quotes that are coming out where Allen didn't want to go to the Bills. He wanted to, let's use Minnesota for that example and just say he wanted to go to Denver.
You mentioned that book comes out in September, right?
I believe September 9th is the release date.
Oh, boy. The context in that book is going to be juicy because Monday Night Football is the 8th.
That's awesome.
So if Williams stumbles and the book comes out and there's more context to these quotes, does it look better or worse?
That's incredible.
Oh, boy.
That's marketing
right
there.
That's tasty right there. That's what that is. That's tasty.
But could you imagine going into that second year?
Yeah, if you saw any of that stuff, for any franchise to have to deal with that, mm-hmm. of like, you think you've got, please let this be the guy.
Yeah.
And like, Bills fans know the context of it. Like, yeah, they've had a 4,000-yard passer in their history, but.
But it had been a long time since they had any quarterback worth anything.
Success mm-hmm. at the quarterback position. And then if that were to come out, oh my goodness.
Well, and especially.
I would hate this job very fast.
But especially you look at the Bills context too there. I mean, I you know, Sneaky Joe was probably like the number one fan of Tyrod Taylor,
mm-hmm.
but also acknowledges, you know, they needed to move on from Tyrod. Could you imagine a year after all that?
Mm-hmm.
We moved on from Tyrod for this guy who and apparently hates being here. Like, yeah. I mean, like that would be.
This is where quarterbacks go to die, really?
That would be really bad. And especially you're in off season, Sabres weren't good, so they're not distracting you from anything. No. And it's also a problem for Chicago. where the White Sox are crap, Blackhawks suck, the Bulls are terrible.
Oh my God,
Cubs are rough. I mean, like, they're living that too, where they're sitting there. They have more
darts to throw, and yeah,
they're still stewing in it. We'd kind of be in the same spot where the Sabres are bad, we get to stew in this idea that our quarterback hates us.
So none of the Chicago teams, there's five of them, there's none of them that are playing well?
They're all bad. Funny enough, they all have, for the most part, horrendous ownership.
At least here, there's only two franchises that can be cheeks at a time,
yeah,
which they've definitely done that.
Well, but even the third, I mean, it's a minor sport, but the Bandits have been great. I mean, for a lot of people, like, that is a great distraction. They didn't win last night, but game on Saturday, 4:30 at home. It's going to be an awesome crowd to potentially win their third one. Chicago ain't got nothing. They're just sitting there going, great. And you know somebody's brought it up too.
Stuck on Baltic with crack.
And you know somebody has, like, absolutely brought up what you just brought up with Monday Night Football. It's September 8th. The book comes out the 9th, and they're just going, yay.
Well, also,
we get to deal with this now.
The book comes out on the 9th. And either the context, so the context is going to help with confirmation bias one way or another based on how Williams plays on Monday night.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
The context will be used merely to confirm things for people based on how he plays. Oh, he really is the answer, which is one of the excerpts that we got. Oh, quarterbacks really do die here if he stinks it up in week one and is outperformed by a rookie.
In J.J. McCarthy.
Or not a rookie, but like a player making his first start in J.J. McCarthy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess he is technically a rookie, but like he's not.
It's gonna be like the Blake Griffin situation.
Would he be eligible for Rookie of the Year? No.
Was Griffin eligible for Rookie of the Year? But yeah, he won it, didn't he?
But I think in the NFL, like, would he be eligible for it?
I think that's right.
No.
Yeah, no.
But is he kind of?
Yes.
We're not really. We'll play fast and loose with that term there for him. But still, if he gets outperformed by McCarthy, it doesn't look good for Williams.
No,
at all.
Terrible.
Mm. So that book is going to do a big piece for confirmation bias, and only confirmation bias, because people will look at the good things and go, who cares?
Their first five games are a little rough. Their bye is week five, but they start at home against Minnesota. That's Monday Night Football. At the Lions, home against the Cowboys, at the Raiders, then bye week, and then at Washington. That is a rough start. That is going to be a rough start. Then they get New Orleans, and the Giants are a little bit later, Pittsburgh, Cleveland.
I don't really hate their schedule overall if they are going to be a better football team.
Yeah, but those first four games are going to be – it's going to be telling. I think it's going to be telling.
And early bye doesn't help for a team like this either.
No, it does not at all. You're absolutely right on that. 803-0550, the number to call. I want to jump back on the Toronto Maple Leafs conversation we're having in the first hour. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens with that organization now that they have officially lost again, this time in the second round. They've gotten past the first round, bugaboo, but it seems to have been a few years too late, as that core is going to really, it feels like, begin breaking up after about 8 years together. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. This is WGR.
Felt like we were ready to play. Felt like we were in a good mindset. And like I said, I thought the first, 10 minutes, they came out strong. And the next 10 minutes, I thought we controlled play. And then I just thought we had too many passengers throughout the rest of the game and just weren't on the same page. And, they get a couple goals and momentum like that, and then you're chasing the game. And it's hard to get it back, when you're down three against a good team that plays sound defensively like them.
Auston Matthews there, and talking about sound defensively, the Maple Leafs couldn't score in this series, Derek. They were having a difficult time routinely putting goals in the back of the net.
And the worst part of this is it's not just this series. Mm-hmm. It is in Game 7.
Yep.
They do not score.
No.
Very rarely do they put the puck in the net in a Game 7. And especially with this core, they don't.
They don't.
And now, if you include the Game 5 in the qualifying round against mm-hmm. Columbus, it makes it even worse.
Yep. I mean, like that is their MO. They just completely shy away. And then no one else kind of steps up to, like – and I'm not blaming the entire roster, I guess, but there's no one there to kind of pick themselves up by the bootstraps and decide they're going to be the hero. No one does. But you look at this series, the first two games they win, 5 goals, 4 goals. Then they lose the next three. They score 4 in Game 3. Then they go into a shell the rest of the way, even in a win. 0 in Game 4. one in game five, two in a game six they win, and then one in a game seven they lose. I mean, just completely barren in
even
terms
of
production.
Even their win is Joseph Woll stands on his head
and
outplays Bobrovsky. But Bobrovsky has been playing ever since game three. He's been a stone wall.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point it turns into how much of this is actually Bobrovsky and how much of it is the core makeup and mentality of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yep. So on that makeup of them, Brad Marchand, this is I'm getting this from Jesse Blake, who does a podcast.
Steve Dangle Podcast Network, yep.
Brad Marchand does not agree with the criticism the Leafs core receives. Quote, they've been working and building something really big here for a while, and they're a different brand of hockey this year. They're getting crucified, and I don't think it's justified. Marchand, of all people, should be like, I totally get it. Yeah.
No,
I'm a big part of it. I get it. I understand.
But also, Brad Marchand, off the ice, is actually a really nice dude. From everything that I hear, Brad Marchand's actually a good person.
It's nice, but he's lying there.
But the thing is that like he's also just so scuzzy on the ice. It's so weird.
He's like full on lying there.
So you mentioned Jesse Blake, like Steve Dangle being a big Leafs voice, you know, in the media scape, more or less says that like the pity tour that Florida takes there is almost like low-key savage as well. And it's like kind of almost the thing that you don't want to hear as Leafs fans anymore is, it's not justifiable.
They're right there. They played a different brand of hockey this year. The problem is
the different brand of hockey still got you only one goal in a game seven. That's not enough.
No.
It's never enough.
The different brand of hockey was this year. You ultimately just totaled what was either last year or the year prior where you finally won a playoff series. And it really didn't change anything.
So there is a non-zero chance that they try to go back with relatively the same core.
Absolutely, yep.
I'm still 1,000% convinced that Marner's gone. He's out of there. And it's because of the fact that the team doesn't necessarily think that there's something there. Marner doesn't think that there's necessarily something there anymore. There's reports that he could have waived a no trade and that the Rantanen deal could have ended up going to Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And Marner does not waive because he's part of the return. At some point, there's enough animosity between you two that there is no retention that's going to happen here. There's enough animosity toward the Leafs fan base to Marner to where it's not worth going back anymore. He's booed every time he touches a puck in the third period.
It was brutal. It was brutal, yeah.
When you're not alone in the struggle, it feels very much like, yeah, no, see you later. And this is why Buffalo remains strong for me. He can play close to his family while then also being now a direct responsible person if the Leafs decline and the Sabres ascend. He can be solely responsible for the next chapter of that.
I think as well, too.
That would sound so cool.
I do think this would play into it potentially at this point in his career. The expectations would be lowered.
Yes.
You know, when you're in Toronto and the moment they got good, it became cup or bust. And it got to the point where
in his last game.
Yeah. And it did get to a point that in most likely his last game in Toronto, he is booed, as you mentioned, every time he touches the puck in the third period. Yeah. We have fans throwing jerseys on the ice in play. And so
even game five, the boos that were happening
were bad.
Were directed mostly at the first line.
Mm-hmm.
When those boos were happening, it was oftentimes when the Toronto first line was out there of Marner, Matthews, and Nyes. And I don't think any Toronto fans are going there saying, I hate Matthew Nyes.
Yeah, no.
Not yet.
No, we'll get there. We'll get there, bud. It'll be your turn soon. But when you look at Marner, and maybe this is an entirely different way of how he's going to be thinking, because I get he's a pro athlete, and most of them are wired differently. But after dealing with this for 8 years, give or take about 8 years, the idea then of going to stay close to your family, Buffalo, hang out with your idol, Josh Allen, and be told, I think pretty accurately, all you need to do is make the playoffs and you'll be hockey version of him, pointing at Josh Allen. You're a 100-point scorer. You've had no issues making the playoffs your entire career. We've got some pretty good talent around here, and you are no stranger to making the playoffs. That's all we're asking, at least to start. But for a guy who probably the last 5 or 6 years has been told, if you don't win a cup, we're going to freak out. We're going to burn your jersey. We're going to boo you the entire time you touch the puck. You're going to have these scars of game sevens and what have you. Might not be that bad to then be the face of Buffalo and then basically be told all you have to do is make the playoffs. And if there really is some animosity, like you mentioned, and you get to kind of be a part of the downswing for Toronto as their biggest rival gets a bit of an upswing.
And no matter where that, he signs, nice. He's getting booed fervently.
Oh, in Toronto? Toronto? Absolutely.
I'm interested in his return to Toronto no matter where he signs. Because, like, are fans going to forgive the playoff ineptitude and walking away in UFA? Walking away in UFA should just be, that's business. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
But Isles fans did not treat John Tavares well with that.
Well, and also with him not waiving his no-trade clause, for Rantanen, who for Dallas has been a playoff nightmare for everyone to deal with,
mm-hmm.
there's also going to be that was our missing piece. Not you, him. He could have fixed us. Yeah. And you decided to stay here, give us nothing for it, and then leave and still perform like crap in the playoffs.
And that's the thing, is that like some of that's going to be, you're wrong.
But
the fan base is wrong in that sense. But
that's going to be the attitude.
I'm also not going to tell you how you should feel at that point either. Because the question that Jeremy raised today with Nate of, will Bills fans get to a point of frustration, to a point of no return with their frustration with this Bills core? And I think it depends on the person. Because a couple times that's happened with McDermott throughout this tenure.
I was going to say, if we're just saying McDermott, I'd say we've kind of gotten there for
A couple of fans, a number of fans, like you said, it is to a point of no return. They don't trust him. Mm-hmm. That's how it is. But a good majority of fans, it has kind of walked back a little bit. And I think because we're seeing a different version of him being expressed out in the media. A guy that is looking like he's trying to have more fun out there. But at the same time, yeah, how much of it ultimately at the end of the day, if Josh Allen makes zero Super Bowls, how good was this era really? But that's a question I hope that we never have to talk about down the road.
And to be fair, they're not the only team talking about in the NFL.
In the AFC.
Baltimore is talking about it. Cincinnati, while yes, made a Super Bowl, have now missed the playoffs 2 years in a row. There's a feeling there of what the hell's happening.
Right.
We have arguably one of our greatest quarterbacks ever in a franchise in Cincinnati that has had a number of very good quarterbacks, if not great ones.
Every fan base in the AFC, outside of one, is really questioning everything at this point.
Yep.
And we went from one team that consistently made...
Well, except Pittsburgh.
The damn
Pittsburgh's Super Bowl. Super happy where they're at.
I mean, their team is. Their fans aren't.
Yeah. Team loves it, though. 9-8, baby. We'll be right there.
But it's,
we're going to get blown up by 20, but we'll be there.
I'm very interested to see, because the entire landscape of the National Hockey League is going to change on July 1st. When a signing from Marner...
Don't give me an 11th hour re-signing.
But ready? If that happens, the landscape changes again. Because what happened the last time something like that went down? Stamkos re-signs in Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
Teams hand stupid money.
Yeah.
To anybody and everybody that's a free agent.
Because all of a sudden the big ticket was gone.
But I still have all this money to spend.
And I have needs.
And I'm not going to lie to you. I'm kind of itching for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you still have guys like Tavares hitting free agency. Sam Bennett, who's going to have that kind of cup tax around him.
One of them's going to. Brad Marchand's going to be a free agent at 37.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'll be a free agent at 37. Tell me that someone's not going to hand him extra term that he doesn't need.
Right. Let's go to the phones here. Anthony's on the line. Anthony, how are we doing this morning?
Hey, good, guys. How you doing?
Doing well.
Not
too bad. Hey, I just wanted to chime in on the Mitch Marner discussion you guys are having. I agree with all the points about the proximity to his house, all that stuff. Like, he doesn't have to come here with a ton of pressure. My biggest concern would be, though, where would he play? I mean, Tage Thompson looks like Lindy kind of liked him at wing a little bit more than center. The discussions around Alex Tuch, possible July 1 extension. I mean, if you got both of those guys locked in long term, I don't believe that Marner plays any left wing or obviously center. What would we, you know, where would he even fit in the lineup?
I'll tell you right now, it's line one wing. You move Tuch down, and I hate to say this, you might trade JJ. as an RFA to try to get that piece on defense that can pair with Owen Power.
Yeah, and Anthony, thanks for the call. I think it does become – you sign Marner, and it does signal you're willing to make big moves, and you are going to make big moves. That's why I'd also say, just for me at least personally, I don't think it's going to happen. Derek, I'm more with you.
We're back to the Myles Garrett conversation.
Yeah, it's the idea of, you know, I also would like to see them add a Sam Bennett, because I think he would slot right in on your second line and be a really good piece that your team does kind of need, that physical forward that is just a pain in the you-know-what to play against. But I also think defense is probably their biggest need. They need that top four defenseman that when Dahlin goes down with an injury, they don't lose 10-plus games in a row.
But sometimes, in order to get an asset like that, mm-hmm. you need to give an asset. Yep. What helps you give an asset? Well, you got your bases covered. That's how. The last thing on this, though, for me, is that at the end of the day, I just want to see the Sabres fly a plane out there.
You want to hear them part of the conversation.
I want to see a picture of Terry in Toronto going to talk to Mitch. That's it. At minimum, that's all I want to see, is that they put an effort in and they wanted to be there to be included. I want them to show me that they are serious, and I'm pretty sure there are a lot of fans that would think the same way of, oh, they actually mean it. I still don't believe in them, but they're there. That's how bad it is for Sabres fans, is just show me something. Show me a pulse so that I can believe.
Well, because you can believe
if
that
Kevin Adams and Eric Staal are mm-hmm. out there, that counts for me.
Oh man,
I need Sabres yeah. representation to show up in Toronto. They don't have to succeed. They have to show me that they mean it.
They have to show you that they mean it, because it becomes very quickly, even if you don't get Marner, there's a belief that, okay, but you are going to add. You're going to be aggressive this year. You know the bullseye's on your back. Adams probably shouldn't be having this offseason, but here we are.
Hey, you know what?
It shows you something.
Hey, we're not going to get Mitch. Tell your agent to give us Sam Bennett's number.
803-0550, the number to call. Not for Sam Bennett, for us. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, we'll be right back to wrap up today's show. Get you ready for Sabres Live. This is WGR. We have your ticket to 8 amazing golf experiences with the WGR VIP Golf Card. For just one low price of $129, unlock a season of golf adventures, including Diamond Hawk, Shamrock Hills, Attica's 10th Hole Golf Course, Bobolink, and Golf Dojo. Your WGR VIP golf card also hooks you up with a free box of premium Vero X1 golf balls from Encore Golf, and score deals at Rick Zurek's Golf Warehouse on Transit in Bowmansville. A portion of the proceeds will benefit PGA Hope. Get all the details and purchase your WGR VIP golf card today at getmyperks.com. We haven't really mentioned golf too much here, Derek. Scottie Scheffler gets his first non-Masters majors, third ever, wins the PGA Championship, and pretty comfortable fashion on Sunday.
A lot of frustration from that tournament, and Scheffler was the only one that was kind of steadying up by Saturday.
seemed to have figured out.
When I talked to Jeff Medius of Tee to Green, he had made mention of that. Like, Scheffler is kind of the one that looks like he's going to be poised to really make a move on Saturday, and then goes into Sunday, takes his thing again, like you said, rather comfortably.
That's two for two, by the way,
for the Tee to Green guys calling their shot before action on Saturday happens.
There we go.
So Kev Sylvester, Jeff Mitis,
giddy up.
You guys are nailing it right now.
It is crazy, too, to say he won in comfortable fashion. Around the start of the back nine, Scheffler had a one-stroke lead on John Rahm. Then Rahm collapsed. I think a bogey, double bogey, par, and then a bogey to end the day. I mean,
good for Rahm that he's been in like the conversation, though, of the last two big tournaments.
Especially after a lot of people were like, oh, he's gotten bad after, you know, went to live and all that. I mean, that's really been Dustin Johnson more than anybody, but Rahm, to be in some contention. Bryson DeChambeau as well, who had a really rough end to Saturday, which looked like maybe he was going to be contention on Sunday. Ultimately finishes tied second for the PGA Championship. Now we're about a month away from the U.S. Open, which should be a blast. That's my second favorite of the Masters, or of the majors. PGA Championship usually sits at fourth because I like the Open. The Open's a little bit interesting. Also got playoff action in the NBA. And for the seventh straight year, we will officially have a new champion. And three of the four organizations at no point in their history have won an NBA championship.
It's kind of fascinating how the NBA is, after the constant run of like the big threes, dynasty ideas, now it is becoming, there's a different team every year.
Yeah, it's a lot like the 1970s
in
the NBA.
It's interesting in a different way because I saw a tweet that you had said, oh, we got to go, mm-hmm. About dynasties being important, but now not so much.
That's going to do it for me and Derek. Coming up next, Sabres Live. This is WGR.